see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
The problem is they made the opera thing seem a little bit gimmicky, you know, like Jacqueline's pretentious girl, which in fairness, I am extremely pretentious. I will never deny that.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends. We know you came here for a Bachelor in Paradise recap.
Sorry, this is a Peter Kavinsky and Lara Jean fan podcast now. I mean, we have to follow our hearts.
And our hearts are not with the Goose or Colton and Tia or Leo. Our hearts are with To All the Boys I've Loved Before.
Just a little Netflix rom-com that taught me to believe in goodness again, to hope, to dream.
Okay, we're getting that look from Nick that lets us know that we do, in fact, have to recap Bachelor in Paradise because it is actually our job.
Fine. So to help us dig a little bit deeper, past this petty drama we saw on screen, we're joined by Bachelor in Paradise shooting star Jacqueline Trumbull. Thanks for joining us.
Brief, like a shooting star.
Exactly. Star, but like you see it streak across the sky.
And then it's gone into the night.
Much too quickly for our taste, but we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
You know, between To All the Boys I've Loved Before and all of this Manafort, Michael Cohen news, like it's like, what even happened on Bachelor in Paradise?
I know. We've been jerked back and forth between something that's much nicer than Bachelor in Paradise and something that's even worse than Bachelor in Paradise. But Bachelor in Paradise is what we're here to talk about. Jacqueline, since you're here and Monday night was your big night, let's start by talking about your time on the show. You came in and you talked to a couple guys. What was it like coming in the middle of this wave of like four women coming in?
Yeah, so I'd originally been asked to be original cast, and I stupidly turned that down because I didn't want to take too much time off work. So me being put in at that particularly terrible time was my own fault. They even offered to let me come in a day before, and I was like, no, I can't take Friday off. So I had to come in at the worst possible time, which I didn't realize. I didn't know there was a rose ceremony the next day. And I also didn't realize that everybody was pretty much coupled up, which is, it's hard to see that on the show. It looks like there are a lot of, you know, open kind of connections. But when you have very, very brief time before a rose ceremony, if people basically know where they're giving them roses, there's no one single. So they pushed me four people to talk to, and three were already coupled up.
Who did they push you to talk to?
Colton, Eric, David, and Kenny.
Yeah, David's an interesting situation because he keeps
he keeps
hitting on Jenna very openly, but he and Chelsea keep giving their roses to each other.
Well, so David was the other possible person I could have gone out with, but I strongly disliked him.
Well, yeah. That does create a problem.
Yeah,
for
I just
a date.
Got. I mean, and it's probably unfair. I mean, maybe if I had spent more time with him, although.
Some people don't improve
sometimes,
that much.
Yeah, sometimes you just have a visceral reaction to a person.
Yeah, but he had a thing going with Chelsea, and I really didn't want to go in and ruffle too many feathers that early on, and Chelsea is somebody that, you know, I'm friends with, and so if I didn't like David and I do like Chelsea, I didn't really want to go on that date.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think you made the best decision. So you did actually ask Colton on the date first.
Yeah, well— Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I ever said, do you want to go on a date with me? I know it was edited that way, but I think that voiceover might have been taken from me asking Kenny. Because I think what I really did was I asked Colton. I couldn't quite believe that his situation was clear, especially because my conversation with him, he was like, it's been an extremely emotional couple of days. I was like, I don't know what that means. So basically, I pulled him aside and I asked what his situation was. And I mean, it was clear. I had my date card that, you know, if he had been open to it, I would have asked. But yeah.
Yeah. And then you asked Kenny on the date.
But we didn't even see your conversation with Kenny, which was interesting. Or with David. I mean, there was no indication you spoke to David, except I think at one point Jordan might have said, oh, I think she might ask David. But there was no other indication that you had even, you know, had any FaceTime with David.
Yeah. No, I had talked to Kenny. The people that I basically just took whoever Kendall and Jenna said I should talk to, who I no longer trust. But they told me to talk to Colton specifically. And then they mentioned Chris, which I'm pretty glad I didn't. And then David and then Eric. So I actually didn't even know that Kenny was going to come talk to me. He just sort of appeared. And we had a surprisingly good conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like often when people come in, they want to tell their friends to go for someone who seems available. And it's not always someone who actually would be a good match.
By the way, I just realized I said surprisingly good conversation. And this is a huge faux pas. I mean, when I went into Paradise, I had kind of low
expectations.
Hopes or expectations. I don't know. And I had never, ever spoken to Kenny before. And so when I say surprisingly good, it was like a pleasant, you know, surprise. We had a really good conversation. Same with our date. It was a really good conversation. And I think that kind of, it wouldn't have mattered who it was. It was very pleasantly surprised. Yeah. Even in New York, if I go on a date, if it's a great conversation, great date, I would say.
I am floored every time I have a good conversation, whether or not I'm attracted to the person on a first date, because it's usually just brutal.
I have
brutal.
To say, I very rarely see anyone talk about the various works of Edgar Allan Poe on Paradise. If ever. I think that was the first time.
Yeah.
So I think we were
breaking
all slightly
boundaries.
Taken aback. Also, just because even if people on the show are interested in those things, it seems like the only bites that the producers ever take are like the people being like, what I care about in a relationship is loyalty, but also honesty.
And also
what?
Love.
Me too.
Don't get me started on that.
It seems like a great way to match yourself up with someone.
There was one, I think it was Tia and Chris, and he was like, you know, honestly, what I'm looking for is just, like, love and, like, someone to be there and, like, just honesty and, like, trust. And Tia goes, couldn't have said it any better.
Someone could like, have said it better.
Perhaps it could have been said better.
Also, there was a point where Tia literally was like, he's just saying all the things that I want to hear, but, like, in a good way. And I was like, Tia, that's a bad that when people say he's just saying all the things that you want to hear, they mean that in a bad way. That's not a compliment.
I mean, we know this show is just full of cliches and platitudes, like, and that is the foundation of most relationships, at least from the viewer's perspective. Obviously, we know a ton of stuff doesn't make the actual show. My other question was that the timeline of it all sort of confused me. Like, Jubilee and Caroline obviously came in on last week's episode, but were you coming in around the same time as them
Caroline,
in real life?
Yeah, Caroline came in the day before, and she took John on a date that night. Jubilee came in, I believe, the morning of the day I came in, and then took John out. So the reason everyone's like, why aren't you with John? John was not there when I came to the beach and had to choose a date.
He was on a date with Jubilee.
Yeah.
Okay, but they made it, because we had a week pass, it felt like you came in a completely different time.
Yeah, no. Otherwise, I would have taken John on that date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you tweeted a little bit about the editing of your date with Kenny and maybe some sound bites that were used from your time with Ari.
It was just shocking. I was watching it, and it was the inflection. I remember it's going really, really well. I remember that. There's a meme made out of it. It's like I've heard it 1,000 times. And I caught that in the first, and then I rewinded it, and then I heard the I really, really like him and I don't want it to end, which I said through tears on my episode with Ari. And that was aired. I mean, both of those quotes were on the episode. So they just it was just sort of lazy. Like they just
the editing has been
it's felt more obvious to me.
Yeah. There's been a lot of like cutting back to previous days and they're wearing the previous day's outfit, but they're making it seem like it happened the next day.
Or going from night back to day, but it's clearly just the same day earlier because, yeah, the outfits are the same. Yeah. It's very...
It makes it seem really labor-intensive how much editing is happening to create, assemble this
So what you're saying
narrative.
Is it should just be more like Love Island.
Yes. That's always what I'm saying. Should we talk about what happened at the very beginning of the night, which was
we
Chris
should.
Finally getting confronted by Tia.
Yeah.
In one of the most stunning just bits of gaslighting we've ever seen on this show.
It was really astonishing. I mean,
he committed.
He does know he's being filmed, right? Like,
I don't know. Given his very flowery second apology of his time on reality television that he put up on Instagram, it feels like it's just a new shock to him every time he behaves badly and then that poor behavior is aired.
It's like, what? People are watching? I don't understand. But I do think he thought we would all be really impressed by the line that he used on Crystal. The never kissed a blonde before.
Yeah.
I just want you to have that title. So he, the night before, was filmed telling Tia that he would not go on a date with another girl. He's really committed to her. He wants to focus on their relationship and growing it and falling in love. And don't worry about another girl. Don't even think about another girl, Tia. That's crazy. And then he immediately made out with Crystal, talked to everyone except Tia about it, and then is sitting with Jordan plotting a four-part, four-lady evening. In which he plans to break a record for making out with the most women in one night on Paradise. And at this point, Tia walks up to Chris and says, "We need to talk." And he says, "Oh, my God. Okay."
He
Chris,
knows.
You don't get to sound frustrated. So she tells him that she heard about Crystal. And she's like, "It's not a big deal. But you did look me in the eye and tell me you were going to fight for me. And not take a date card and all that." And he's like, "That was real. That was so real. I wouldn't take a date card. I had a moment with Crystal, but that doesn't change anything." Remember for later in this conversation that he said he had a moment with Crystal, but that doesn't change anything. It's just so weird to watch because she keeps like poking holes in what in his explanation. And then when she successfully pokes a hole in what he's saying, he's like, "What are you talking about? You're making no sense. You're crazy."
Weirdly, she's making perfect sense.
She's making so much sense.
I was just so relieved she didn't back down from it. I mean, because a lot of times in gaslighting, right, you start really wondering if you are making sense. And I mean, that's the whole point, right? And she just, I think the problem is that she didn't give a shit about him. And so when your emotions aren't really involved, then gaslighting is very obvious.
It's less effective.
Yeah.
and more obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
true.
It's very hard for him, especially when it's such blatant gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
He has no like hold over her to leverage. Like, she's just like, "This is ridiculous.
Right.
I know what you said and I know that your actions run contrary to that.
I know.
Like, why are we talking about
this?" I love that at one point she's just like, "This is so crazy and so bizarre that it's laughable."
And Chris says, "Don't act like it's me." And she says, "Are you serious?" And at this point, Crystal comes up and decides she wants to be part of this conversation for some reason. If I were Crystal,
I'd
be
staying far away.
Crystal,
turn
away.
Turn away.
Crystal is in this unfortunate situation where she's getting to witness Chris's terrible behavior, but she actually does kind of like Chris. And so she gets sucked in a little bit more, which disappointed me. Tia, in front of Crystal and Chris, is like, "You know, I don't want you to be hurt, Crystal, because he looked me in the eye last night and said that he had feelings for me." And Chris is like, "What's going on? I have to respect your thing with Colton. Like, that's what I just have to do." Even after I spent the last 3 days freaking out about how
I'm trying to get Colton,
trying to get
off.
Colton out of the picture. And
Crystal's just sipping a margarita in her ITM.
She's not about the love square. She doesn't want to be part of a love square. She's in the bottom left corner, which we all know is the worst
corner. It's the worst corner of the love square. I mean, I too wouldn't want to be in a love square.
Yeah, although I have been in the past. that's kind of being the bottom left corner in a love square is kind of my identity. And finally, Crystal is like, look, I want Tia to get to know you, Chris. Like, I don't want to, like, cause an issue. And Tia says, no, let me be very clear. I'm removing myself from the situation. And Chris says, that's all right. I had already made that decision. Now, remember, not 5 minutes ago, Chris said that nothing had changed with Tia at all.
And he was still definitely wanted to date her.
Right. Still fighting for her. Still would not take another
date. But apparently, at the same time, he broke up with her before she could break up with him.
Right.
It's amazing. He has such talents.
He's playing 47-dimensional chess right now. Like, there, he's doing so many things simultaneously. She can't even grasp it because her brain is just too feminine and womanly. And Tia's like, okay, whatever. I don't care anymore. Sadly, Crystal at this point is like, great, Chris is available. I just want to be like, Crystal, run.
And then he just leaves her to go drink, and she ends up crying by the side of the pool. Chris is – what a fucking mensch he is.
She's like, Chris, now we can be together, holds her arms out to him, and he, like, runs straight past them to the bar.
I'm sure you're really just sad that you didn't end up going on a date with Chris, Jacqueline.
Well, what I was thinking during this is that a lot of people are like, why would you – like, don't you all realize that you're above these men, or, you know, or whatever? Like, and so I'm thinking, like, doesn't Crystal realize that she's above Chris? And the problem with this show is that, and actually Caroline put it the best. She said Rose campaigning. She's like, I don't really like this Rose campaigning. And so it doesn't matter, you know, if somebody's totally immature and awful, they're the only person who can give you a rose, then you just go in for it. And so I don't even know if Crystal liked him, but it was, that was her... that was her chance that week. And you feel so dirty doing this. I mean, which is why, like, I think it's why one of the reasons I was unsuccessful. I just couldn't pull out those big stops, you know, to, like, convince somebody that I had no chemistry with, that I was, like, there for him just so that I could get to the next week and maybe have the chance to meet somebody else. So, I mean, yeah, it's a whole show about people forcing themselves to like another person.
It's true.
Yeah.
That is literally the premise.
It is.
You must like someone. You must find a boyfriend for this night.
Yeah.
It's a so very that you can get weird to the next thing time. To watch. And it gets weird later also with Kendall and Joe when it sort of becomes this question of, like, well, is someone obligated to just keep trying to like someone that they were trying to like because they were the best option there?
Right.
Or is that a terrible idea? To me, it seems like a terrible idea. Like, but that's the premise of the show. And, like, if you throw away that person, then you're, like, putting yourself back out on a limb. And, like, it's always the thing that I thought was insane about The Bachelor before I started watching it. And it's still insane. But, like, I just have more of a depth of feeling about The Bachelor now, which is, what if you show up to be The Bachelor or The Bachelorette and there are 30 people there, 25, and you don't like any of them? Like, to me, that seems super realistic. What if you hate all of them? Or, like, find them all?
I hate most people that I meet, especially, like, in a dating capacity.
If you put me in a room with 25 semi-random, somewhat qualified dudes, I probably wouldn't want to marry any of them. Like, so... but the premise of the show is, like, if your heart is open and we put you in a room with all these people, you will definitely fall in love with probably several of them.
And also they will fall in love with you
and they will
equally.
Fall in love with you equally. I do love one that gets twisted, and it's, like, when Juan Pablo, like, totally fell in love with Charlene. And she was, like, and kept her around despite all her signals that she was not super into him. Because usually as soon as they get the sense that you're not into them, they, like, send you packing. Anyway, that was a really irrelevant tangent. But
her savage making out with him at every opportunity was probably the signal that she was sending.
Listen,
she was into
sometimes
him.
You just have chemistry physically, but the rest of it isn't there.
Yeah.
That is real. It's very real.
So in the aftermath of all of this, Chris is kind of licking his wounds, even as Crystal is crying over the fact that he doesn't necessarily want to pursue her now. He's at the bar with Jordan and is like, how am I in the wrong? Like, what did I do wrong?
Because Jordan is probably the best person to go to for.
But I will say, Jordan was totally correct.
It's true. He was actually on point with
this. He says, you're not wrong, but if you're making moves, do me a favor and tell the girl you're making moves. And Chris is like, oh, my God. So I should have told Tia?
Jordan's like, yeah, man.
Yes. It's so basic.
Yeah, I will say, as not necessarily artful as Jordan is, he is pretty direct.
Yes. And this is, you know, we saw that in the end, it kind of worked out better for Jordan, even though he acted like kind of a dick when he was telling Annalise that it was over. He and Annalise apparently salvaged a sort of friendship
that
because
was
of that.
One of my favorite scenes Incredible. Of this entire. Partly because I love Annalise, but I also really love Jenna. And I know it was just so awesome, especially since she got kind of, you know, cut out of Ari's season, to see somebody just be like, I had a fantastic time. It was the greatest day of my entire life. It's just difficult to describe how amazing it was. It's like, yes, Jenna.
Oh, and they, like, I get it. I get the chemistry between them. I've never been rejected that hard, like, especially by someone who just the day before was like, I think we should maybe get married. So I felt for Annalise in that moment. I was like, yeah. I feel like you could let her down a little easier. But on the whole, honesty is preferable, especially when you're in a house where everyone else is going to know what's happening. You don't want to be the last person to find out.
Can we just – I just want to note the really nice moment between Crystal and Bibby.
Yeah.
That happened.
Mm-hmm.
After Chris had, you know, made her sob in the corner over her margarita. She has a nice little exchange with Bibiana, and Bibiana's like, you're not a bitch, Crystal, if even I know that. Look at all the progress you've made.
I mean, it's interesting. I feel like a lot of the women who had issues on their season end up thriving in paradise because when they don't have to, like, share one guy with everyone, they're much more chill. But I'm seeing guys have the same issues that they had on The Bachelorette, and I'm wondering why. Like, Jordan and David are still having beef. Chris is still acting like an idiot.
I do wonder if some of that is that their season hasn't aired, so they haven't received that very harsh feedback on yeah. their behavior. And so now they, like, Chris apologized for his behavior on Becca's season after he had already filmed this.
Right.
So that is something important to note is that, and I, you know, with David, I assume both of them might have been a little bit more aware of how they were coming off.
Yeah. This is starting to retrospectively inform Mentel All for me.
When Jordan was pissed.
Yeah.
Jordan was pissed. David was very like, we're cool, Jordan. I don't want to get into it with you. And Chris was just like, I'm a dick. Here's my apology.
Well, and Camille went after Jordan, too, which was clear that Jordan felt extremely betrayed by that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we know Camille's coming in later this season of Paradise. So I'm sure we'll see.
It's going to keep unfolding. And I understand why everyone was super over talking about Colton and Tia. But because I'm over it, too.
And also why Colton was really frustrated with Jordan.
Yeah.
Because Jordan repeatedly went after him in Paradise.
Right. And also because Jordan, honestly, is coming off worse than Colton. Like, I'm pretty tired of the Colton and Tia stuff, but I don't think that they're doing anything wrong.
I agree.
They're just, like, tiresome. They're like your dear friends who are always breaking up and getting back together. And you're like, I don't want to talk about this anymore, but it's not because I'm mad at you or, like, yeah. I hate you. I just, like, please just break up, for God's sake.
It's true. It's true. And I do, you know, put blame on the show for making them the focal point. It's not as though they asked to dominate the storyline of Paradise this much. Like, that is in the producer's hands, the editor's hands.
Yeah. And apparently they stopped filming early because they had so much material.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they could have kept digging a little bit. And again, like, there are people we just don't see for a whole week who are still there. And I'm like, there's got to be stuff that you could be showing us. Even like with Bibby and Wills, that they apparently were hanging out. And then we didn't get the shock of betrayal at all because we didn't know that, like, when she gave her rose to Colton. And I feel like they're missing out on opportunities for more spreading the drama around a little bit. Also, while we've been talking about Chris, I wanted to mention that I think a lot of people are very concerned by the behaviors that he's showing, being like red flags And we don't want to, like, diagnose anyone on the air or anything like that. But definitely, if a guy is, like, telling you that you're crazy for wanting to talk about broken promises or the way he's treating you, that's not a great guy for you to date.
Not
so,
a good
like,
sign.
Obviously, I think that's pretty straightforward. All right. So, Jacqueline, we talked about your time with Colton, and Kenny.
You do, in fact, arrive. You have a very cute hug with Kendall. Yeah.
That was cute. I had also a really cute hug with Jenna because I had no idea she was going to be there.
Aww.
So, yeah, it's more screaming and hugging.
Yeah. You could have been the Jade and Carly of this season. If
could
only
have been.
You hadn't had a job other than social media influencing, which is, I mean,
going
sacrifice.
Poorly.
Makes life so much more complicated. So at this point, I think Colton and Tia are off and they're having conversations about maybe getting back on, which is what we all love to see. Colton is saying he doesn't want to see Tia get hurt. Tia is like, I just want to date Colton and no one else. So they have a talk that we then see them have like 7 more times about how much she wants to find love with someone who chooses her. And he's like, I'm not sure if that's me yet. And she's like, well, but please. And he's like, I don't know. And eventually they kind of decide that they're going to try it. More or less.
Yeah. I don't even remember at what point that happened.
Later
they decide. They finally reach the conclusion that they should just give this a go. I think Colton sort of gets a pep talk being like, just let yourself enjoy this. Both of them are kind of told, like, let yourself enjoy this moment. Let yourself have time to figure it out. And we have to remember that they've probably, I mean, how many days had they even been filming by this point? Not
like,
that many.
Like 3 days.
Yeah.
Feels like just like maybe 4 days.
4 days.
I mean, it's also frustrating to watch these conversations because Colton is afraid of hurting Tia because she keeps telling him that if he dates her casually and changes his mind, it will hurt her. And so, like, of course he doesn't want to take a chance on doing that. Like, if she's laying it out, like, this thing that you're doing will hurt me. And that would be bad, then, like apparently Raven is going to cut his penis off. Mm-hmm. If he does it, then he'd have to be crazy to sign up for that. But it keeps being presented as, like, well, why don't you just decide that you definitely want to commit to me permanently?
You know, I mean, this is hard because I think women have been in this position so many times with, you know, men just, like, waffle and can't figure out what they want. And, you know, they make them seem second choice. But, yeah, over a 4-day period, this guy comes in, hasn't seen her or talked to her in months. I mean, I think that he's warranted to a little bit of indecision. And also, I'm going to make the same argument with Kendall. Like, you have to go in and try to make the connection that you actually want. And if he's ambivalent about Tia, then it's not that easy to just say, I'm going to commit to you. I mean, if his heart's not there and it's confused and whatever. And so it seemed legitimate that he would go out with other women.
Yeah.
Even.
I mean, I don't want to advocate playing games, but I do think that if a guy or a girl is like, I'm not totally sure about you,
mm-hmm.
The way to get their attention is not to follow them around asking them if they've changed their mind like every 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And I know this from experience.
You're like,
doesn't work,
girl.
Doesn't work. And I've also been the girl who was like, okay, like, I guess I'll like lay off and like hang out with some other people. And like sometimes then they realize that you're actually cool to be around when you're not harassing them about whether they
and
like you all the time.
Sometimes they don't.
And
I think,
they
you know,
don't.
Look, this is the thing with relationships. It's always a gamble. You're always opening yourself up to the possibility of being hurt or having things not go the way you want them. And so I think what's been interesting about the Colton and Tia thing is that they both have been pretty honest, and they both have legitimate concerns. It's exactly what you said. Like, we're sort of tired of hearing about it, but at the same time, both of what they're saying is pretty valid.
Yeah.
Like, it's valid for Tia to want someone who's sure, and it's valid for Colton to have feelings for her, but not know. Yeah, but not know whether he is sure. And yeah, I don't know. I did feel for both of them, and I continue to just think that like their communication levels is at the very least so far beyond most people in this situation that, you know, good for them for at least being honest with each other and having that level of respect for each other.
I didn't feel like the Colton Tia thing was something you could even take sides on, because she's in such a difficult position too of having gone on the show. She tried to make a connection elsewhere, unfortunately with the worst person on the island. But I mean, it's, you know, she is there with him constantly. It's not like, it's easier to, you know, play games almost when you're in a city and you can get some distance from each other, or, you know, you can like try to hang out in kind of more neutral ground. But this is the least neutral ground that exists.
Oh, yeah. I always say it's like adult summer camp. So everything is just really intensified because you are living with everyone on that beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also feel like it's funny that people are so fed up with this when it's like, we're all so like thrilled about Jared and Ashley. And remember when she spent like two entire paradises crying because she couldn't get him to say, I like you back. Like, it's so random how we decide who we're rooting for and who we're not.
Yeah, I think Becca Martinez tweeted something about like the whiplash of Bachelor Nation's like alternating adoration and then complete, you know, despisal of,
yeah,
of people.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted. So, oh, by the way, we didn't talk about how on your date you spoke your grandmother's Slovakian.
Yeah, great-grandfather.
Yes. Yeah. Did you check that later? Did you say it correctly?
Well, so I knew that the direct translation was correct. The question I had was whether saying mami dobry chas was – that means we are having a good time, but I'm not sure if you would act – Chas means time, but it's like a unit of time, right? Or like a literal time. I don't know if that can mean like we're having a good experience here. I don't know if that translates the same way. The Slovak people who have reached out to me said that I was correct, but
hey.
Oh, look at that.
So the literal translation was correct. I just don't know if it would be used that way. That was another bit of editing. It made it seem like I'm like, I just randomly learned the language of my ancestor. What I meant was I went on study abroad and had a bunch of countries to choose from, and they placed me in Slovakia, which I did not want to go to. I'm happy in retrospect, but my great-grandfather was from Slovakia, and so I randomly ended up learning this language of sort of my deep heritage. And so I didn't randomly learn the language. I was there with only Slovak-speaking people. I had to learn the language, but there was no other choice for survival.
That's so interesting.
You and Kenny seem to have, like, as you said, a really interesting conversation.
Yeah.
He seems pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he will always be the person who ruined my birthday. So I'm slightly bitter about him in general. But no,
that's,
I mean,
fair.
He was great. And also when I said, like, we're having surprisingly interesting conversation, before we were even on camera, we were talking about West Virginian politics.
economics, that is the content really. I want to see on the show.
Right. And so I didn't expect to be having that conversation. It was more like economics and kind of voter demographics. And he was like very much fueling that conversation. And so, yeah, I was surprised to be having that conversation immediately on my date in paradise. That was all I meant.
And even, like, from what we did see, like, I was like, wow, they're talking about the existence of opera. This is so substantive. Like, that's the base level of bachelor dates, is that you just don't acknowledge any specific interests or things or ideas
or
at all.
Right, places you've traveled.
Places you've traveled, opinions you have about stuff other than loyalty and relationships.
Yeah, and the part, you know, the problem is they made the opera thing seem a little bit gimmicky, you know, like Jacqueline's pretentious girl, which in fairness, I am extremely pretentious. I will never deny that. But we talked most of that time about love, but it certainly wasn't like I'm looking for honesty and loyalty. It was we were talking about how being in love and how dating has changed over time, and also how his daughter comes into this, because I was asking him basically what it's like to raise a girl who's, I think, 11, you know, in this culture where we have things like Bachelor in Paradise and Bachelor where people are getting, you know, engaged because that's become kind of commodified in a way. And I think we have so little faith in marriage that we're just willing to slap a ring on it just for entertainment instead of for, you know, meaning. And so we had a really, really long, interesting conversation about that. So it wasn't really just trading, like, I like opera, you like traveling.
Yeah, and I bet they were like, we're not going to use the conversation where they talked about how we're commodifying love. For sure. What else is there in this conversation?
Yeah, and talking about how fairy tales make it seem like, you know, once you're married, then all of it's easy after that. And the only thing you have to do is get the person. And
lock them down.
Just lock them down. And then there's no work after that.
No.
Because the real accomplishment is getting engaged and having a wedding ceremony, not like making that marriage last after.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kenny ends up in the middle of this love square himself because Annalise also decides to make a play for him.
Yeah.
After the Jordan situation doesn't work out. She sits him down after his day with you, Jacqueline, and is like, I know I don't present a sexual energy quickly, but I don't want to close
it.
The door.
I have it.
It's here.
The energy's here.
If you just open the door.
So naturally they make out.
Of course.
And wrestle. They wrestle and make out.
I feel like.
Or is the wrestling later?
The whole strategy. The wrestling was later.
The wrestling was later.
But they do wrestle. She sets up wrestling for him during the pre-rose ceremony cocktail hour.
Annalise puts in the work here.
Yeah, she went all out. And she is the last person I expected to, like, campaign so hard for a rose. Because she seems so lacking in that kind of, like, chutzpah and, like, self-confidence, which I relate to. Like, I always look at Annalise and I'm like, I would be crying all the time. I would be doubting myself. But I definitely would not set up a wrestling date pre-rose ceremony.
Good for her.
And describe myself as wanting to present a sexual energy in order to get a rose. So I was blown away.
And Bibi also puts in, like, a last-ditch effort with Kenny. Yeah. So Kenny is just, like, makes out with everyone, is pulled in all directions.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic on Paradise that they're always, like, the people who are really in demand right away, like Joe. But then someone who is also in high demand, like Kendall, like, locks them down and takes them kind of off the market. And then by, like, the second and third week, we have the people who were not in high demand suddenly become in very high demand because they've been left available for, like, four different people to make
plays
for.
It's really just economics.
It so is. So it was really interesting watching John and Kenny suddenly be the most popular boys at camp. I mean, good for them. And Jubilee and Caroline are both making their last pitches to John as well.
Oh, I made a pitch to him, too.
Oh, really? We didn't see that.
It wasn't so much a pitch.
It was a soft pitch.
Yeah. I mean, people, because that was the first time I got to meet him. And we had both been told by friends that we should meet each other. And so we talked. But, I mean, I wasn't going to compete with two women who had actually gone on dates with him. And Caroline and I were super connecting that weekend. And so I would have felt like a dirtbag if I, like, tried to make out with him or something. But we had a nice conversation. Yeah. The way that ceremony worked, and when I say everyone was coupled up, I really mean it. It was the strangest ceremony ever. First of all, there was a thunderstorm, so it kept stopping and starting, and then we would be separated. But when it was actually the cocktail party, sorry. It would be – there was a couch, and it was couple, Kenny in a room over here, and then John in a room over here.
Oh my God.
Me, Caroline, Bibby, and Jubilee having to wait our turn for both men. And that was all we could do. There was – yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That sounds grim.
Also, like, these are just – this is my nightmare. Like, having to compete with a bunch of women over men that you're not even sure if you're into. Like, that's all of my dating nightmares wrapped into one tiny little package.
Yeah. It was awful. It was horrible. I mean, Caroline and I both really hated the experience. Yeah.
But you got a closer friendship.
Yeah, that
other.
Was great. Yeah.
Had you guys not really connected during your season?
You know, we just didn't really talk. We just kind of hung out in different, I don't want to say cliques, but different groups. And
there were, I guess by the time she left, there were still a lot of women there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, a lot of the connections that I formed were much later on. I'm also kind of slow to warm up, especially with large groups of supermodels. And so
same.
And Caroline was so that type, you know. I mean, I actually found her one of the more intimidating forces in the house.
Really?
Yeah, but she's actually one of the most approachable people in the world. So
I really enjoyed watching her on Paradise. I was sad. So four women end up going home at this ceremony. It's you, Caroline, Bibi, and Nisha. And it was sad. It was four people that I was like, oh, I would have wanted to see more from all four of you.
Yeah, we really saw like nothing from Nisha.
Even though she was there for this is week three.
Yeah. We never really saw her. And whether she was pursuing any relationships, we just saw occasional narration.
I think that was her problem, is that she didn't have any kind of romantic connection. When that happens, you're pretty much toast, unless you're Bibiana.
Yeah.
But Bibiana is just such a good narrator. Yeah. I mean, she inserts herself, you know, in situations. So
she's the good one-liners.
I really got the sense that Bibiana had been promised someone specific else would be coming.
Maybe.
And she thought that she'd be, because she was so like, my person might be coming and it sucks that like I have to go
home. I'm so curious who she put down her little list of people.
And I think it's pretty common for people to have a good sense that someone they want to meet is coming and to try to stick around for that, as we remember with Joe and Julia. The Joe and Julia debacle of
It's funny that that was such a big deal, because now it's just like standard. Everyone knows that everyone talks to each other before they go on Paradise.
Like he spoke to Samantha.
Yeah, it was like Samantha was just completely roasted. She was on a Reality Steve's podcast recently and she was like, yeah, we like texted back and forth for a couple weeks maybe, and maybe had one like FaceTime conversation.
It's also funny when she did come in and it was like this scheme that they had and she was sort of like, oh, hey, sure, we can go out. Like, didn't seem that into him.
No, I think they had spoken casually, but it was just turned into this
he
like,
just
epic
had an obsession
line.
With her, for sure. Yeah, but I did get the sense that Bibi wasn't making too hard of a play, because she had another person or other people in mind that she thought would be coming later.
I should have asked her that. I don't know. I mean, I saw her at the airport and we were both just fuming. Especially her.
So they sent you all home like right away?
Yeah.
You didn't even get
Let me
like,
just
to
paint
a
picture
hotel.
Of my birthday.
Please.
We're up on the rose ceremony was supposed to be, I mean, probably at like 2 a.m., but instead there was a thunderstorm, so it happened at 6 a.m. So we haven't slept in a very long time. I go home at 6 a.m. I'm actually kind of cheerful about this, because I did not enjoy my time there. And I was anticipating, I was just going to feel like such a dirtbag. Like, I didn't. Kenny and I had no chemistry, and I think that was perfectly obvious on screen. I don't think that he was into me. I wasn't into him. As a friend would have been awesome. But when you're put in a position where you have to romantically pursue someone you're not interested in, you start resenting it. And so that kind of soured. And so everything just felt really, really contrived and really manipulative, and I didn't like it. I think if I had been original cast or something, it would have been different, because relationships would have formed naturally. Anyway, it's 6 a.m. I leave. I'm in a fairly jubilant mood. And then my damn producer is sitting across from me for this hour-long interview ride. We love each other. He is crying. So then I'm crying. And the whole time I'm like, fuck you, Bill. Do not do this to me. I don't want to be caught crying in my interview. Then I go home and I'm like, okay, Caroline and I want to order a bunch of champagne room service and spray it out of the window of our balcony and jump on the bed and have a real birthday celebration. They're like, nope, you still don't get your phones and your flight leaves in 3 hours. So try to get some sleep.
Oh,
and then it was
God.
Like a layover flight. So, yeah. So I got home on my birthday at 11:30 p.m.
God.
That is shocking.
But I'll always
that
have the story.
That is depressing. You should be entitled to one day in a hotel room and some room service. My God.
That's supposed to be like the consolation prize for not getting to stay on an air-conditioned island with a bunch of bros.
Yeah, it's like when Michael said when he went home from Winter Games and he just got to like bro out with Ben Higgins in
I
the
know.
Hotel. It
sounded
I
remembered
great.
That, actually. So I thought that Caroline and I would be able to do that.
At the very least, you would think. Well, it's ridiculous.
Well, justice for you and Caroline and Bibi and your hotel room experience.
Thank you.
That's just
terrible.
Yeah.
And Nisha. You should have all gotten a fucking suite out of this.
And Jacqueline, I just want to say, life after 27 is pretty good.
We have to talk about this line. You took quite a bit of shit for it.
Yeah.
I took quite a bit of shit for absolutely everything that I said on that one day.
Oh. It's hard. It's hard being the day player.
I literally sat outside on the stoop and chain smoked cigarettes yesterday. I don't even smoke cigarettes.
Oh God!
I think I did it for the aesthetic. I
like. You're like, it does look cool. That's always actually. I always say this about smoking. I'm like, I'm not a smoker. I think it's obviously very bad for you.
Yeah.
But like, when you say it's not cool, it doesn't look cool. It's just a lie. It does look cool. Yeah. That is actually the only thing that draws me to
know,
it.
It's very hard to know what to do with your hands in a social situation. So, like, obviously having a little thing to wave around and...
You know, my inner voice smokes cigarettes. When I think about myself in situations, I'm always smoking a cigarette. It's odd. I don't smoke in real
the
life.
The one
we are not advocating
period.
Smoking.
No. Smoking cigarettes is absolutely horrible. Smoke cigarettes. The one, like, two-day period that I decided to try smoking cigarettes is when I was traveling through Greece after I finished school, and someone gave me these like very beautiful thin pastel colored cigarettes that had little gold on the ends, and I was like, yes, I should obviously become a smoker.
Yeah,
I'm like,
wow, why they
I'm a real sucker for aesthetics.
This is why they outlaw stuff like that and like fun advertisements and flavors in America.
Apparently very susceptible to it.
It actually does get kids to smoke. It's very effective.
To be clear again, I do not advocate smoking.
It.
Smoking is bad. It kills. Don't
However,
smoke.
If you're really depressed, at least you can feel like a glamorous, poetic person who's depressed in a black and white movie.
For a brief moment.
For a brief moment.
But just to clarify for all the people listening, were you in fact being sarcastic when you asked if you were past your prime now that you were 27?
Yes, I was being sarcastic. Although cognitively, it is true that we pass our prime around 22.
Okay.
That explains so much about me personally. Although... Also, like, as this study has been going around since you returned from filming, that suggesting that men hit their prime on dating sites at 50, and women hit their prime
at
18.
Which actually explains a lot about my own dating experience.
For me, it doesn't, because no one was trying to date me when I was 18.
I am past my prime at 27. Why am I getting shit for this?
It's okay, Jacqueline. You were at my 31st birthday party, so we can just, you know, it's okay. Don't worry. I'll always have diminishing returns more than you.
Yeah. Don't worry, everyone. Jacqueline is willing to hang out with us even though we are in our 30s, which I still haven't adjusted
decrepit.
To. And at that point, the ladies get the power again. We're back to even numbers, and the guys are going to start coming in.
I live for these weeks. I like when the women have the power. It just makes me feel better.
Me too. It should really just be only the women who have the power. There's very rarely a woman where I'm like, she just needs to get sent home because she sucks. But I feel that way about like most of the men.
I know. I was thinking about that so much. I was like, I would be sad if any one of these women got the boot during that rose ceremony. And I was like, but half of these guys, I could cut them tomorrow. It's fine.
Yeah, so I think the new format should just be like a cast of women, and then you send in new guys in waves, and they pick whoever their favorite is.
Or they get to go on dates with their friends. Just a friendship show.
Let's eliminate all the drama. It's just a show of girls doing nice things for each other on the beach. Okay, so rose ceremony. Jordan gives his rose to Jenna.
David to Chelsea. Again, we're confused. Kevin to Astrid.
Chris to Crystal, John to Jubilee, Joe to Kendall, Colton to Tia, Eric to Angela, Kenny to Annalise. And as we're talking about this, I'm realizing that we never talked about the big rift in Jenna and Jordan's relationship that happened pre-rose ceremony.
Right. I forgot that happened on that night. I'm getting all of my timelines confused. But Jordan completely loses his mind and tells Chelsea and Jubilee to shut the fuck up.
Which I didn't understand.
I think they were just giggling.
Right. Let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, still Jenna's birthday somehow. And
No, it's not. It's my birthday.
It's Jacqueline's birthday. However,
Jenna gets a present.
David brings Jenna an enormous stuffed animal, a dog. Jenna loves it. Gifts are one of her love languages, and I think she should tell Jordan that because he'd be all in. And clearly David is kind of just doing this to troll Jordan because he and Chelsea have had a pretty consistent thing. So this is kind of odd. But Jordan completely falls for it, like stalks up, grabs the dog, stalks over to the water and throws the dog in the ocean. Then goes back to Jenna and is like, I don't like this. Like, I don't like what's going on here. And she's like, I'm so confused, and runs away. And then Jordan goes back to the whole group. Most of them are pretty amused by his freak out. And Jordan is particularly pissed that Jubilee and Chelsea are laughing.
It's unclear whether they're even laughing at him. Who knows?
He says Jubilee is like a new pair of tires and he's a Ferrari.
I don't know what that means.
I felt icky about it, but I wasn't sure exactly what the metaphor meant.
Metaphors are incredible, though.
Sometimes they really hit the mark, and sometimes I'm really like, I don't get it. He's like, I don't even know who she is. They keep calling her Jubilee because that's her name.
He calls her Jubileen. He says, like, Jubilee and Chelsea aren't ready for a man and that they should just shut the fuck up. And suddenly everyone who was amused by his freak out is like, what the hell is going on? This person is losing their mind and being horrible to these women.
And just envision, if you will, amid all of this, Jordan is wearing the vest and pants from a three-piece suit made out of bright red floral fabric.
Who was it that said he reminded them of the monkey in Aladdin?
I think Chelsea.
That seemed like a correct assessment.
Yeah.
My roommate came in while we were while I was in the middle of this episode, and she hadn't heard that line. She was like, oh, he looks like the monkey from Aladdin.
Well, it's very rare that you see anyone else on TV wearing only the vest from a suit with, like, no shirt under it. Like, that look is... I think the last time we saw it was the monkey on Aladdin. Like, people just don't do that. I was imagining it, the full suit, and I was like, nope, that's not any better. Just won't work.
I do want to call out that Eric and Annalise went up to Jordan directly, which I thought was great, and both just said, your behavior was unacceptable and you need to apologize. And I think often we see people who aren't directly involved in any sort of drama tend to stay out of it.
Laugh.
And I was glad to see people just directly confront it and say, like, look, dude, this isn't okay behavior and you need to adjust.
Yeah. And they're also sort of worried because I think a lot of people in Paradise thought Jordan and Jenna were a great couple, and now they're like, Jenna's not going to want to have anything to do with him if this is what he's going to act like. And Jenna does seem pretty turned off by it, but he comes back, he apologizes to everyone a bit begrudgingly.
Well, I really liked Annalise's role to play in this. Yeah. I thought she did a great job with him, especially considering they had been dating earlier.
Yeah, that was surprising to me, because if I were her, I'd be like, go lie in your bed, you piece of shit. But she was like, well, we established this, like, relationship, and I can use that to go, like, talk some sense into him. And she did, and it was really, I thought, selfless and nice of her. And Jordan apologizes. He thanks Annalise and Eric for talking him down. And then we have the rose ceremony. Jenna is questioning things with Jordan, but she does accept his rose. I've never, like, do people ever reject the rose? Like, you want to be there for the next week, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it doesn't really mean anything to me, accepting the rose.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more from Jacqueline and a lot more on Paradise. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home and constant daycare bugs. And I'm just, like, dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate, like, what's the correct amount of social energy? What kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize? What space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge? Either way,
Therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/love to see it today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/love to see it. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all like weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Are you one of those people who thinks they don't have time to prioritize wellness? Yeah, guilty.
Well, Claire, Allo Moves is here to change that whole mindset for you.
The app makes it so easy to keep your wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. There's yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, there's mindfulness and self-care tips, even healthy recipes, and so much more.
It's kind of wild how far-reaching Allo Moves goes. And their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour. It really just depends on what you have time for that day.
Trying to get in a good sweat? Then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, HIIT classes, or former Pilates workouts with or without weights.
Or you can find stress relief with things like meditations, affirmations, or face yoga.
It's so hard to prioritize wellness when you have a busy job or kids or both. And now that I have both, it's so important to me to be able to squeeze in a workout when I have that random 5 minutes to an hour in between tapings after bedtime. It makes such a big difference how flexible it is and how easy it is to get what you need from the app.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves.
Go to allomoves.com now and use code LTSI20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
allomoves.com, code LTSI20. One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit, and I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
spelled BABBEL.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
And then
night two. Which begins with the women saging each other.
Yes, Crystal is saging them to cleanse them because last night was crazy. Jordan tossed the dog into the ocean and she's like, dude, you can't litter. Don't litter, my man. I mean, it's true. A dog like that is like a big
chunk
of litter. If that like washed into the ocean, it would just go join a trash island somewhere or be eaten by a whale and not good for the environment.
So it seems that Jenna is still, you know, concerned by Jordan's behavior.
She says something about how his eyes were scary and dark or something. Like, she seems like concerned by his anger, which is the correct reaction.
I was going to say, it seems like a really rational concern.
Yeah. Kendall and Joe are talking about how great their relationship is, which of course means that Leo is coming in to whisk Kendall off her feet. It's hard to watch Leo now, given
everything that's come out about him.
Episode with Becca Martinez and everything that she revealed and how he handled it. But the women in paradise don't know any of that. And apparently he has some sort of like nuclear sex appeal because he came in and they all just like their knees melted and they dissolved into the floor, including Kendall. Also, I want to note that he's wearing a pink shirt with pineapples on it, which I thought was fun and paradise-y.
It was fun.
Jordan starts making fun of it. And I was like, Jordan, you were wearing a suit vest and pants made out of bright red floral fabric yesterday. You do not get to have a judgmental opinion about
anyone
a pineapple
else's
shirt.
Clothing, no.
Like, if you just don't think anyone should wear bright floral colors, then okay. But, like, clearly that's not a blanket stance you have.
I think that often Jordan's stances are very specific to him and whether or not other people are threatening what he believes to be his.
Right.
It's specifically women that he believes he has ownership over.
It's very specific to how he feels at that particular moment.
Yeah.
For example,
is he threatened by someone in
that
moment?
You must wear a suit at a cocktail hour if he's wearing a suit at a cocktail hour. But another time, if he's wearing golden underpants at a cocktail hour, maybe that rule doesn't exist anymore. Like, I mean, he's very consistent in that way. Leo comes in and chatting up all the blondes.
All the blonde women.
How did all of the guys from Becca's season turn out to be so into blondes? Like, there were, like, four separate guys who were like, I'm just really into blondes. I don't know. Blondes are kind of my thing. I just love blondes.
But they were in love with Becca.
Theory? I know. Well,
my
she
theory
was
is that
the exception
they
that proves the rule.
They weren't that into Becca. That's my...
But even, like, Tia, if they were casting for Tia, is not blonde.
No.
It's very strange. I guess men just all want blondes and... Listen, I can't argue with that.
Yeah.
Also, we got several conversations this week where Crystal talked about how she has like pure Scandinavian heritage. And I was like, I don't think she means any harm, but this is a really weird political moment to be like making a lot of hay out of your super white heritage on television. I would just recommend not talking about it. So Leo pulls Jenna for a chat.
Crystal.
Jordan takes this opportunity to talk about how they're all at a laundromat. And
they're all just washing their laundry.
You have to take your dirty laundry out in front of other people. But then, like, in the end, you know, you all have your laundry out at different stages. And, like, you some of people have started washing it earlier than other people. But in the end, all your laundry will be clean.
Who is the what is the laundry in this
so
metaphor?
I watched it back a few times. And as far as I can tell, what he means is that by freaking out and showcasing anger issues, he was just taking out his load of dirty laundry.
Oh, that was the dirty laundry.
But soon his dirty laundry will be clean. And Leo hasn't even started laundering yet, which actually turns out to be true.
It is true.
Turns out to be true.
So maybe Jordan is just right about everything.
Chelsea ends up stealing Leo from Crystal, which is a move that is rarely shown on Paradise if it happens. Mm-hmm. Like, usually you see different conversations happening, but you never see someone walk up and be like, oh, can I talk to him?
Yeah, I noticed that too, but it is kind of how it works. I mean, that's what, like, Kenny did to my conversation with David.
Yeah, it seems like they probably were invested in crafting this narrative where Chelsea is, like, the girl with the crush on Leo, mm-hmm. who's just, like, making herself really available.
I feel like Chelsea is just, like, can I please make a connection with someone other than David?
Dear God, I support that. And I can't really figure out what they're talking about. It's a very confusing conversation. Doesn't seem to go super great, but they do both find each other attractive. Leo talks to Kendall. And she is like, it's great here. I like everyone, and does not mention Joe. And so Leo asks Kendall out on the date.
And they both live in L.A. So I feel like that seems to be mm-hmm. a big incentive for, at least on Kendall's end. You know, she says later that she's thinking about what could feasibly last after this. And it makes sense that you might want to consider someone who actually lives in the same place as you.
Also, it hadn't been very long, and Joe's a little bit slow to open up. I mean, he's a man of very few words, and so I think from Kendall's perspective, like, she's still very, very much in the discovery phase.
Yeah. Even he tells Wells after she leaves on the date, like, oh, yeah, I told her how I felt. I mean, I said I like you.
Right.
And I was like, Joe, this is a Bachelor show. You have to use some variant on in love. It can be falling. It can be beginning to fall in love. It can be planning to fall. Like, you just have to get love in there somehow. But Kendall does sit down with Joe before she goes, and she's like, I really just feel like I need to do this. And he's like, well, I hope you have a terrible time and it rains. And then he tries to kiss her and she kind of swerves
the
him.
The most awkward exit. Oh, and then they, like, try to go back because they don't want to leave things on an awkward note. And I was like, this is just a mess.
I mean, this whole thing was weird because, like, I haven't really been buying their connection. I feel like Kendall seems to do all the work in their conversations, and then his contribution is just being like, what? And she's like, ha, 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 you're so crazy. But he does have that quality of, like, seeming silent and withdrawn such that when he shows that he is hurt, you really feel for him because it doesn't seem performative.
True. Yeah.
So when he does seem really bummed that she's gone, I was like, oh, Joe, I'm sorry. I hope you guys get married. And I was like, what am I talking about? I didn't think they should be together to begin with. So meanwhile, Leo and Kendall head out for the contractual Jorge the bartender date.
I am living for these
two of them.
For these little Jorge appearances, though.
Yeah.
He's delightful.
He's living his best life. He says he wrote a romance novel called Lágrimas en Paraíso, Tears in Paradise.
You know, if
Chris
Harrison can write a romance novel, Jorge can write a romance novel.
I mean, agreed. and I have read Chris Harrison's romance novel, and really, anyone should consider writing one. And so they're doing a photo shoot for the cover, of course, because everyone thinks Leo looks
and
like.
This is also where we get the most confusing cameos.
I also want to say, as someone who reads romance novels, like, for fun, that are not written by Chris Harrison, there's a lot of cheating in this for a romance novel. Like, romance novels are not about cheating. They're
this
about
felt more,
a beautiful true
felt
love.
More telenovela than it did.
Yeah, it was more
novel.
Telenovela. And we do have our guest stars who have been long teased.
Ari, Lauren, Ben, and Amanda.
Ari is portraying... They basically are just, like, acting out the plot while Jorge relates it, which is...
What a great deal to get a free trip to Mexico for that.
To do basically
to do
nothing.
That.
And also it was completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
So Ari plays Raul, a ranchero who's married to Margarita, a sweet, innocent woman, portrayed, of course, by his fiancée, Lauren. And Brad Fordo, Ben Higgins, is a musician who's married to Veronica, a social media influencer.
Played by Amanda. And all Amanda says is, what? And ignores her husband.
They don't have a great marriage.
Raul speaks very poor Spanish.
Shocked. Veronica, like, so basically Veronica hits on Raul and they make out. And what I loved about this was that, of course, Ari could not kiss another woman in front of Lauren after what he did to her, even if it's, like, theatrical. So they have to hide their faces behind his hat to get the scene of him cheating on her, Margarita. And then Veronica and Margarita are...
Who's the other woman?
They're caught by their spouses. Veronica leaves Ben Higgins. He feels unlovable. And then Raul apologizes to Margarita and she forgives him.
Immediately.
Gosh, I wonder what story is the inspiration for that denouement. If I'm Lauren, I'm like, are you just mocking me right now?
Oh, no. She knew.
I mean, like.
That was the point. That was the point.
Yeah. I mean, look, they got a free trip to Mexico and they're like, okay, I'll do this dumb
but
shit.
But she seems really sensitive about it. So I was sort of surprised that she would go along with the whole, like, oh, yeah, I'm easy. Like, I just took him right back.
Yeah.
But they seem very happy and are getting married.
Jacqueline,
so.
you went to Lauren's bridal shower.
I did.
How was it?
It was super, super fun. The night before, there was like a yacht charity thing. And that's when Ari was there and my sister randomly was there. And we all just drank a lot. So by the time the bridal shower came the next morning, everyone was just dead.
Hungover.
Incapable of conversation.
That's what my bridal shower was like. So yeah. At the end of my bachelorette weekend.
That is
so
true.
That people wouldn't have to travel twice. And if you look at pictures, my face is just like completely round and swollen because I drank so much the days before.
Yeah.
Classic.
No, but Ari and Lauren seem very happy. Yeah. And it was great seeing both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long were they like... down there to film? Were they filming that like in the middle of Paradise filming
the bridal shower?
No,
their cameo.
Oh,
did you overlap with them?
No, they came literally the next day.
Okay,
yeah, because they FaceTimed me like 2 days later to say happy birthday. And
sweet.
They were like, we missed you in Paradise. It's like, motherfucker, like, one day
should have campaigned for that rose. They, Leo and Kendall are the cover models, so they just, like, get in a pool and make out a bunch while Jorge takes photos.
That making out montage was one of the funniest. Just interspersed with Joe being like, I'm bummed. And then just
and also they were always, like, making out in varying states of undress in different places.
Yeah. I always wonder what that's like. Like, honestly, I don't think I would want to see my friends like hardcore making out with people. And I always wonder what it's like to like watch those things and be like, oh, that's my best friend.
Just, I don't
like,
want to see myself hardcore making out with someone.
Same. What is that like?
Oh, I thought they looked good.
Yeah, they did look good.
Yeah.
Oh, they looked good. But what is it like watching yourself make out with someone?
Oh, watching myself?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, that was a little bit. I'm just trying to analyze how I'm doing.
Can't
you're
be
like,
distracted
you're like
by
taking
other
notes, like, could have gone done better.
Right.
More neck kissing next time. A little less tongue.
No, it's actually very useful to have that game tape to play back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so back at the house, Joe is like, I'm not threatened. I'm not threatened at all. Everything is fine. Like, I'm definitely, I think she's falling in love with me, or maybe not. Kendall and Leo return after just basically making out for what seems like hours, interspersed mm-hmm. with, like, three words of conversation. And she tells Joe, she sits down with Joe right away, tells him about the photo shoot. He's like, did you make out? And she says, yes, we kissed. And he says, oh, you're kissing all the guys now. Which seemed like a slight overreaction to me.
Who was the other guy she kissed?
Apparently she kissed John, like, last week.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning, maybe?
Yeah, like way back.
The first night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's a long way from kissing all the guys now, but I understand he was upset. And she asks if he's going to open himself up to other girls, and he says no, he's not interested romantically in anyone else.
Joe is all in on Kendall.
But Leo, meanwhile, is chatting up Annalise, and then he is chatting up Chelsea. He ends up saying to Chelsea, it's raining. He's like, I'd like to get caught in the rain with you.
What a line.
So they go in the hot tub and make out. Sure. I mean, it's one of those weird things where it's like, I don't necessarily blame Leo for it, but like, he's just not coming off super great. And he kept making comments like, I guess I could make out with every girl here. I'm not going there yet. And it's like,
right.
Okay,
buddy. It's the way he's talking about it rather than his actions. Like, look, right. He and Kendall are both seeing more than one person, and that's fine. So I don't think it's like he shouldn't be allowed to also, you know, try to make connections with other people. But to speak about it in such like a cocky way of like, oh, I could just make out with all these women, like it makes it feel very transactional and, I don't know, kind of objectifying. I don't love it.
Well, especially because then the next day, Leo sits down with Kendall and is like, I think there's a story to be told with us, a beginning and an end, which, by the way, what? Like, and a middle, but they're just at the beginning. And he like tries to kiss her, and she's like, hey, so are you like a jealous guy? Would you be uncomfortable if I were like kissing?
He's like
100%
yes.
Definitely.
I'm jealous.
An alpha. I want my woman to like belong
alpha.
To me.
I hate that.
Alpha I hated this
is my
so
trigger.
Much.
Yeah.
I
find me a nice beta.
He goes, he says, you know, you want your woman to be yours.
It's like, I'm sorry. You were making out with Chelsea last night, like 12 hours ago, max. So like, if you want me to be cool about how you're, like, making out with all the blondes on the island, then don't turn around to one of them and be like, I'm an alpha. You belong to me. No kissing other people. But she's very understanding and is just, like, basically then, like, okay, so we, like, can't make out here in front of Joe either. Like, deal. He handles it poorly. I can't wait to see how this plays out, though, because it seems like there's going to be a really big blow up and you can just see it simmering already. Colton gets a date card. Why?
I felt like that the audience was like coasting into the Joe Kendall storyline and they were like, nope,
yeah,
we're just going to turn.
We're going to veer right around and drive right back into Colton and Tia land.
I care so much more about the Leo and Kendall arc. Although I didn't really want to watch Leo, at least it was.
I did want to watch Kendall, though.
I did want to watch Kendall.
Yeah.
And also, Colton and Tia have already had a date.
Yeah.
I know. At one point, Tia says, this is basically our first date.
Yeah. Like, Colton and I are on a real date. You just went on a date like 2 days ago. You can't do that. There are rules.
But Astrid says this date will be really good for them. She thinks that Colton will ask Tia to be boyfriend-girlfriend.
There's a lot of pressure for this to be the boyfriend-girlfriend date.
Yeah. And we know that we should have known that this date was coming because we had seen photos of Raven and Adam on a date with Colton and Tia. And that hadn't happened yet. So here we go. They go shopping in town, and then they go to a square and dance, except actually Jorge is there, and they're playing musical chairs. And they just happen to need one more couple. Who could this couple
they
be?
They could have just taken a chair away, to be honest.
No, Claire. There are rules.
Rules. The rules are you take a chair away every time you have the same number of couples as chairs. But they got Raven and Adam in there. I thought it was funny that Raven was like, why did you bring Colton on this date? And Tia was like, oh, no, he brought me. And I was like, well, what would production have done if they brought in Raven and Adam and they gave Colton the date card and he brought, like, Chelsea? Like, did they have a pretty firm plan on that? Because it seems like a risk. So Raven, after the competition, pulls Tia aside and is like, I don't think this is a great idea. I don't trust Colton. I think he's just going after the latest it girls. And you can't, like, look at the sweet things he's saying to you or his great qualities. You have to look at – I was like, well, you should look at his great qualities. She's like, you have to pay attention to his actions. And Tia's like, well, I'm really good at reading people. And Raven's like, are you, though? Like, love you, but, like, maybe not. And then Raven says, I just want you to find someone who treats you like Adam treats me. And I was like, Raven, do not rub salt in her wounds. Like, that just seemed like such an insensitive thing to say to me. Like, I found love and it's so great. And, like, I do want you to have that too, but you're going about it all wrong.
I was wondering, it seemed like something specific had prompted her concern. And it was unclear to me at this point what exactly had prompted it, because Tia's sitting there saying, like, we had these conversations and he actually hasn't done anything that's been super disrespectful. But I also understand Raven from the outside is looking at it. She's like, you just went on Becca's season twice. You're putting yourself in this position to essentially be rejected by him over and over and over again very publicly. And so that was sort of my read on
it was
on where
interesting
she was coming from.
Seeing Raven come in with her commentary, coming sort of from the perspective that maybe the outside world had, whereas there's a different vibe in Paradise of, like, we support Tia, why can't Colton and Tia just, like, make it work? And the outside perspective is Colton's a player and he's jerking Tia around and Tia needs to, you know,
extricate herself.
So Raven is coming in, bringing this sort of, like, shock of I guess the outside, if not reality. So then Tia sits Colton down and is like, Raven doesn't like you and she doesn't trust you and she doesn't think I should date you. So could you, like, say something that will show that she's wrong, maybe? And he's like, do you want to be my girlfriend? So I guess they're dated. They're boyfriend-girlfriend now. Fixed. Everything's fixed. Totally fine.
It's all perfect.
Let's just forget that, like, not an hour before, a vendor asked if she was his girlfriend, and he said, let's not put any pressure on things. He's moved past that. He's ready to put lots of pressure on things. Yeah, so, like, whatever. This date, we've talked so much about that.
All right, they're together.
On.
Back to... Jordan and Jenna.
Yes.
Jordan first announces, I'm such a nice guy. And you always know that when someone has to clarify that they're nice, it definitely means they're nice.
Well, Jenna says something interesting, which is, just because you can be mean doesn't mean you're not nice. Which is true, I guess. I mean,
most people have the ability to be mean.
To be both. Yeah. Yes. But she's like, but I have my eye on you. And I thought it was also funny. They were talking in front of a group of people and Jordan is, like, telling Chris and Joe, yeah, I'm working my way back in with Jenna. Jenna's sitting next to him. If I'm Jenna, I'm like, okay, like, don't pat yourself too hard on the back yet. But of course, here comes Benoit. Wearing quite a beach outfit, I have to say. He's wearing denim shorts with the cuffs rolled up, Converse, and high socks.
I thought he looked cute.
I thought he looked cute from the waist up. I mean, I'll be honest. Benoit isn't really my type.
Mine either, but there's something that is, like, appealingly sweet about him.
No, he seems sweet. I do disapprove of...
The high socks were a lot.
I also disapprove of dark denim shorts rolled up because the contrast is so strong between the underside of the denim and the dark denim.
It didn't particularly bother me, but okay. I hear your concerns.
I'm kind of endeared by bad dressers, actually.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And the fact that Jordan hates his outfit was, for me, a bonus on Benoit's side. Apparently, Chelsea's family is French-Canadian.
Chelsea is really just like anyone like, but David. Anyone.
She's like, I have a child at home. Why is the only person here I can date someone
a
who
child.
Is a child
yeah.
at home? Benoit pulls Kevin aside to get a sense of the lay of the land. All the women are like, oh, Benoit, he seems like a good guy. And then Astrid drops this truth. They all seem like good guys until they're not. That's the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem.
Yeah, the nature of just being alive today. And so Kevin tells Benoit that Astrid and Tia are basically off the market, but he should just go for whoever he wants. But he's like, but look, I think you'd really like Crystal. I know you like blondes. I think your energies would, like, match up. But Chris, meanwhile, has all his goose eggs. In Crystal's basket.
Well, there are no other baskets available, so.
No one else is interested in giving him somewhere else to put his goose eggs. So Benoit pulls Crystal first, and
they have a very, they just, it does not work.
It doesn't work. No chemistry. Which doesn't surprise me. I was surprised, really, that Kevin thought they would be a good fit. But I guess Claire is also sort of a high-strung blonde.
Yeah, I think, you know, Crystal does have that sort of fun, frenetic energy. But also, Jenna has that.
Yes.
Just in a different way. And I think Benoit just ended up vibing better with Jenna.
Yeah, and Claire is so earnest and vulnerable and sweet, too. So I don't. Whereas Crystal's more of a kind of stronger. I mean, I don't want to compare strength, but she kind of presents as, like,
a different kind yeah. of intensity.
I feel hard for me to say things about Crystal.
Right.
Yeah. I like Crystal is the yeah. thing. It's just I've experienced her in two different ways.
Right. And I think what's like what I saw with Benoit and Crystal's vibe seems emblematic, which is that he wants to have like a sort of direct, earnest conversation. And she gets very like flirtatious and diffuse around guys.
Yeah.
And like it lots of little laughs. And like, yeah. So she would be like doing a little flirtatious laugh and be like, oh, I'm sorry. My ass is hanging out. Let me adjust. And he'd be like, well, okay. So like, do you want honesty in a relationship? And she'd be like, oh, sorry, I'm distracted. Like, the flirting vibes really didn't match up.
Well, he called her Kendall, too, right out of the gate, which
oh,
not
that
a
was
great
so
start.
Awkward. So awkward.
He talks to Jenna next, and they get right into how much they just like outgoing, honest, loyal, generous people. And she's like, you're the first person who has said all the things I want. And I just imagined her, like with a little checklist while she's talking to each person, be like, well, he said honest, loyal, and generous, but not outgoing.
Yeah.
And instead he said like sweet or something. Yeah. Like, I don't know if we want the same thing.
Meanwhile, Jordan is just seething because, you know, every time someone he feels threatened, he just goes after them in some way. So he has decided that in the real world, Benoit could never just walk up and steal his girl because apparently I don't know what. Jordan's inner vision of himself is really something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for one thing, they're just not in the real world. Like, that's the concept. So, like, there might be, like, a difference in the real world in that.
But it's irrelevant.
But it's irrelevant. Also, in the real world, Jordan wouldn't be acting like Jenna belonged to him after they went on one date and then she got mad at him and didn't want to talk for, like, 3 days. Like, so. Yes, Benoit very much would be able to walk up in the real world and steal this girl. He doesn't think that Benoit, he thinks Benoit will ask her and she won't say yes, but she actually does say yes.
Very enthusiastically.
Very enthusiastically. They have a sort of night date. Jenna gets in a little black jumpsuit. She looks super cute.
Great yeah, jumpsuit. Great. This entire outfit and the
lips.
Lipstick. Oh, I was very on board. I was like, I would copy yeah. that look.
I know that Jenna, she does these great, like, signature, like, lipstick looks. I feel like I've liked her with the more natural look in Paradise, but then she like pulled out that red lip and I was like, perfect deployment of like this, the bright red lip. unfortunately, not a great color to wear when you're about to hard make out
with
someone.
It did not seem like a lip stain. It was certainly a lipstick.
It was indeed a lipstick.
Got all over Benoit's face.
They never even acknowledged it. No. I mean, they must have, and they just cut it because it was funnier. But
it like, was, oh God,
I
it
feel
was
like
great,
if she told him
in.
that he had lipstick all over his face, wouldn't he have tried to clean it off? But he did not. Like, it just. Yeah. I mean, first they have sort of a dinner date, and they talk about what they want from relationships.
They can both go deep.
Oh, I bet they can. They can go so deep.
So deep.
They make out in the street. They make out at the table. He finds it really sexy how she bites her glass. I learned a lot about flirtation.
I'm learning a lot from flirtation from watching Jenna. Jesus, she's the most adorable thing I've ever seen.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
I never knew that men found it sexy when you bit your wine glass.
Unfortunately, I'm going to try this now.
That information is no longer useful to me. I wish I'd known it sooner.
God, the little lip or the tongue biting thing when she's smiling. I don't think other people can get away with that, though.
There are definitely things that she does that, like, if someone else did it. Like, Jordan will be like, I love how she sticks her tongue out when she likes something or something. And I'm like, right. But, like, if another girl did that, I bet you wouldn't be so
weird.
Yeah.
Like this.
We can't all be Jenna, unfortunately. I also love that Jenna carried him down the street. She's very strong.
Oh, yeah. She does a lot of fitness.
I was very impressed.
Yeah.
Because she's so, like, she seems so dainty. But, like,
no, girl's got muscles.
Arms of steel.
Yeah.
So when they get back, Jordan is waiting up. He's been going crazy in his moments.
He's the only one still awake. Everyone has gone to sleep.
Yeah. He's been in his moments comparing Benoit to Pepe Le Pew. I have to say, a lot of the guys seemed really confused. Like, if you speak French, they assume those are all the same. So they're like, this guy is French. Jordan compares him to Jean Blanc, who is neither French nor French Canadian.
Yeah, that was a very confusing.
I was like, what is happening? Just because French is involved in some way.
It's not all the same.
He's like, Benoit should keep his little French baguette in his pants tonight. Thank you, Jordan. And he writes something really big on the sand with a stick as a big gesture.
I was nervous. I'm like, this is just a man rage drawing lines in the sand. I don't know where this is going.
I assumed it was going to be like, fuck you, you want to hate, go to hell, Benoit, and your little French baguette. We have to wait. We wait until Jenna returns and he asks to talk to her. And she's like, okay, Benoit, I'll be right back. Not a great sign for Jordan.
It turns out that he drew the words, I'm sorry, in just giant letters on
the beach. That's what we call a big gesture.
And he said, I respect you and I'm sorry. And what's a guy got to do? He's kind of like, I drew the words really big.
Yeah.
So you have to accept it now.
I will say, I actually kind of appreciated this from Jordan, though. It was mostly when he decided to walk away. Like, he kissed her on the forehead. He's like, you do your thing. I hope you choose me. But
that
only
was the correct way to play it.
Jordan has been really confusing because every time he does something that I really like, I was getting such positive vibes from how he talked to her on the beach and was like, look, you fascinate me. I think you're amazing. You deserve someone who's willing to do anything for you. Like, I don't need an answer right now. Make sure that you make the decision you're okay with. But, like, let me know because there's only one Jenna in the world. I was like,
that was
oh, my God,
sweet.
I'm getting, like,
wonderful.
Heart flutters. It was so sweet. He seemed really earnest and, like, he really cared and was trying to do the right thing to make her happy. But then as soon as he does something really sweet, he will always turn around and do something so dickish that I'm like, I don't know how to feel about this
person. It's real emotional whiplash with Jordan.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Jenna, in a way, has brought out both the best and worst of him because you get to see him courting someone that he actually cares about and wants to see happy, but also someone that he genuinely gets really jealous and angry about. And those are – it's so different from watching, like, fake Jordan, like dicking around, basically, which is what we used to see.
I think he's actually a quite good person, and he has a sense of justice, and that gets in the way of a lot of people because then they feel justified in extreme reactions and anger and jealousy. And you can tell, like, when Mental, whenever he felt betrayed by Camille, he came at him really, really strong, but it's because, I mean, that seemed to you know, interfere with his sense of justice. So I like him. I just think he has some maturing, which isn't surprising at 26.
Yeah.
He should turn 27.
He's 26.
He should turn 27.
But then he'll be past his prime. I'm like, honestly.
That doesn't count for men.
No, you're right. 50. He's going to keep maturing until he hits 50. Yeah. No, that was a really nice note for him to end on this episode. And I hope that we will see more good stuff.
Just
from
more
Jordan.
Growth. More personal growth from Jordan.
More metaphors from Jordan. I want to see the movie that's playing in his head at all times.
It must be stunning.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's what really I want visual. My life to be like. I'm in a movie. Like, you can tell here, like, he'll talk about Jenna, like, I can just see myself, like, chasing her through a field in the rain on a Sunday afternoon. And I'm like, is that what's happening in your head?
I'll tell you that my life has been a TV show and you don't want it.
No, you definitely don't want you. It's actually better for your life to be a movie because mm-hmm. then, like, mm-hmm. all the conflict is resolved.
Right.
That's true. Wraps up
real
nicely.
The TV show just goes on forever.
So we leave off kind of on this cliffhanger of who will Jenna choose? Who will Jenna choose? Who will Kendall choose? There's a lot to look forward to next week.
I have to say, I think that people are... Kendall has been really enthusiastic about Leo and not so much about Joe. It kind of seems like she's leaning toward going with the new option. But then we do see this blow up in the previews where Leo says, good luck with grocery store, bitch. And it makes me think that she's going to pick Joe.
Yeah, that's what was strongly implied.
Right. But like I'm seeing a lot of people or hearing a lot of like, oh, well, things are over with Joe. And I don't think that's true.
I don't think so. Also, you know, she just met Leo. She got a good first initial vibe. But, you know, perhaps Leo will reveal some of his less desirable qualities over the next day. And she will be swayed away from him.
We'll see. No spoilers, Jacqueline.
No spoilers. But I do also want to just call out before we finish that there is a pretty delightful credits scene where John is just telling a series of dad jokes to Chelsea.
I really felt for Chelsea in that moment because it's really hard to react to, like, a really bad joke that, like, isn't bad enough to come around to being funny again.
Right, and then have to do it repeatedly.
Yeah.
He just kept being like,
here's another one. And she was like, no, it's still not funny, but, like, it would be rude for me to just look at you blank-faced, so.
Good thing Chelsea is very charming and very cute.
I want better for Chelsea than what's been happening so far.
I know. Nick and David? I mean, come on.
Nick was the biggest douchebag I think I've ever seen.
Have you met him?
No, but I just saw
do you want to?
Saw him on that day, but it was unbelievable.
Yeah. Not a low grade quality of guys across the board. Not that there aren't some good
some
ones,
standouts.
But it's always good to remember that even the ones who seem good probably suck secretly because that's just the world we're living in.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm really cynical.
Believe that like any man has probably done something crappy, and most women, you know, we've probably all been assholes. So
yeah,
let's all just remember
get out
that.
There and find love. So that's it for this week. Can't wait to find out what goes down with these love triangles next week. And Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
It's time for Feminism Fails. And this episode was just sort of a stew of toxic behavior. But let's call out some specific moments. First of all, start light. Joe sort of slut-shames Kendall for kissing Leo on their date and says... So I guess you're just kissing all the guys now. Obviously, he's upset, and so we want to cut him a little slack. But that doesn't mean that he should just imply that it's, you know, that kissing two guys is like some crazy sign of horrible promiscuity. So we're just going to give that a 2 as a little boop on the nose.
And then, of course, Chris gaslights Tia hardcore. It was just completely egregious. Don't pretend that a woman doesn't understand any given situation for your own gain.
In order to make her feel insane.
Right. That's really crappy. So we're going to give that one a 4.5, a 5 maybe even. It was bad.
couple from Jordan now. Jordan says that Joe pulled Kendall first and therefore, I guess, has ownership over her. We're going to give that a 3 because they were joking around. Otherwise, I would be pissier about it.
And then Jordan just generally acts like he has complete ownership over Jenna, which he does sort of backtrack at the end. But we're going to give that one a 3 because it's just not a great instinct.
And finally, Leo describes himself as an alpha and tells Kendall, "You want your woman to be yours." Suggests that he wouldn't want her kissing anyone else in paradise. This is a whole set of gross assertions and gendered assumptions, especially because Leo went on a date with Kendall and then made out with another woman. So clearly it doesn't cut both ways. I'm going to give that a 4.
And that's it for Here to Make Friends. Thanks to our guest, Jacqueline Trumbull, and our producers, Nick Offenberg and Sarah Patterson.
Do you love Here to Make Friends? Find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to subscribe and give us a rating. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, so please like us there. You can also find us both on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose, or you can send us an email at heretomakefriends@huffpost.com.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week for way more Paradise.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite, too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.